This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. One of the key recommendations in the report by the 9/11 Commission is to place more than a dozen different intelligence agencies under unified command. 9/11 Commissioner Slade Gorton explains the importance of the National Intelligence Director.
We do say in our report that perhaps the greatest single failure leading up to 9/11 was a failure in imagination. And we haven't figured out a way to pass a law mandating imagination. But we do want a structure in which imaginative answers can at least get to the top, get up to this National Intelligence Director, which they haven't in the past. We believe that we will have at least as great a chance and perhaps a greater chance for more than one idea to get up to that National Intelligence Director from 15 different agencies when they're all going one place than when many of them were just lost and never got out of their own departments.
Former Senator Slade Gorton from the hearings of the 9/11 Commission. Congress returned this week to find intelligence reform on the front burner. Senators John McCain and Joe Lieberman introduced legislation to enact the Commission's recommendations, including the National Intelligence Director. Yesterday, President Bush agreed that this new position should have authority over the budgets of those 15 intelligence agencies. Some of the other major initiatives in this area include a National Counterterrorism Center and public disclosure of how much we spend on intelligence. Later in the program, the assault weapons ban is set to expire next week. What changes, what's legal, and what isn't? But first, the fourth in our series on the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Today, intelligence reform. What proposals have you heard that you agree with? What still needs to be done? Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Thomas Kain, chairman of the 9/11 Commission, also the president of Drew University. He's with us by phone from his office on campus, and it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's good to be with you.
Much of the talk surrounding the 9/11 report is focused on this new National Intelligence Director. How would this restructuring make us safer?
Well, first of all, this isn't just our recommendation. This has been the recommendation of a number of groups who've looked at the problems of intelligence agencies for a period of over 25 years, including the Scowcroft Commission and a number of others. The idea is that there's nobody in charge. The problem we found at 9/11 was when you had people like Hazmi and Mittar, and for your listeners, those were two bad guys who the CIA identified attending a meeting in Kuala Lumpur. They got away from the CIA, went to Bangkok. What we didn't know is that they came then to Los Angeles. The CIA did not share with the FBI. We didn't know these people were living openly under their own names in first Los Angeles and San Diego and became, of course, some of the hijackers. We had their names early. They should have been watchlisted, but nobody passed up that information. Nobody shared it. So we believe that a National Intelligence Director could manage a case like that, ensure that information was shared, set the tone, and make a decision. And I can give you, just from the story of 9/11, if you want, three or four other examples of a lack of sharing of information and a lack of anybody being in charge.
I'm sure the report and a lot of people have read it, and it's replete with examples of that sort of thing. But the question we have, why does a shuffle of leadership at the top affect these decisions on the ground? I mean, there's a criticism of this proposed restructuring, as I'm sure you know, that it's changing things at the top without necessarily changing things on the ground.
Well, you got to do both. I mean, we know, for instance, the last director, George Tenet, told us it's going to take 5 years to rebuild the CIA. Well, the director of the CIA ought to be busy with that rebuilding. The director of the CIA has got to hire more people. He's got to get more diversity. He's got to get language skills. He's got to get the number of people who can penetrate al-Qaeda. That's very, very important. That's his job. The FBI has got a very, very big job in changing that agency. So it isn't just the old J. Edgar Hoover breaking down doors. It's an agency that can look for problems and perhaps break up terrorist plots as they're occurring in this country. The other agencies all have similar jobs, but somebody has got to be in charge. There is nobody in charge. It's not a shuffling of boxes. There's nobody there. The box is empty. If you ask who's in charge and who's responsible, the answer you'll get is the president. Well, that's like saying nobody's in charge. The president's responsible for everything. So when you say the president, you're saying nothing. We need somebody in charge. We need somebody to make sure these reforms happen, to make sure our intelligence apparatus works. That's about as important a recommendation as we made.
There had been a recommendation from the 9/11 Commission that this position be in the White House. You've now changed your mind on that?
No, but Congress wants to do it somewhere else. And their worry is, and we understand this as a commission, we put it in the White House because we were trying to give it power, and there's no more power you can get than being closely associated with the president. It would be the appointing authority. But the Congress, in its wisdom, including our best friends, are convinced that if you put it too close to the president, you might have more of a danger of the making intelligence too political. And that's not a major recommendation. So if that's what Congress feels, we're certainly happy to go along with that.
Now, the other big issue has been budgetary control and whether the NID, the National Intelligence Director, should be able to hire and fire the heads of these other agencies that will report to him or her.
If you don't do that, don't create the position, because the only reason to create the position is to give it power. Washington loves to create czars and then give them no power. It did that with the drug czar. Appointed a good person, but the legislation didn't give him hire and fire authority, didn't give him budgetary authority, so there's not much he could do. If you're going to make a position, give it authority, give it control, otherwise don't do it. And so we've said that. We said very plainly, either give it a point of power, give it budgetary control, or leave it the way it is. Because it won't make any difference any other way.
As you look at this now, let me ask you first about the National Counterterrorism Center. This is another principal proposal in this restructuring. How would that work?
Well, this is, again, to force the sharing of information so that things like the Massawi case would have come up immediately and not got lost in the bureaucracy. We would have a number of centers, and the administration would decide, given the threats facing the country, what those centers were. But they would be under the National Intelligence Director. They would be looking at those particular areas and kicking up the information as it came in from a number of intelligence agencies to the National Intelligence Director. So you might have a center on Al-Qaeda. You might have a center on weapons of mass destruction. If there was an area of the world we were worried about, China or something like that, you could have a center on China. But centers would be flexible depending on the problems affecting the country. But they would be places where the information was bucked up and the information would be shared. The representatives of the various intelligence agencies would all have people on these centers.
There is going to be, you're realizing now, and I'm sure you knew it before, the difficulties of reform in this area. It's going to be extremely difficult to get this through. There appears to be some considerable momentum at the moment, but there's going to be one chance, basically, to do a major overhaul. Are you at all concerned that there's some reform, some change that you guys decided not to recommend because it was maybe too bold? Is there something unsaid, undone, that you now wish you'd put in there?
No, I don't think so. We discussed this very, very thoroughly, and this was our first choice. There were no compromises made. I mean, people have said, did you have to compromise to get unanimity? Well, we didn't. This was a proposal, as we started discussing it, that met the various needs that we saw coming out of the 9/11 story. We feel it would protect people in a much better sense than they're protected now for the future. So there wasn't any, wasn't any great thing we left unsaid or undone. This is tough. I mean, we recommended something that's very tough to do. You get a chance to change government in a major way, maybe once a generation. And this is our chance. And we, all 10 of us, 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats, have studied this thing for a long time. Believe if we don't take this opportunity, then we will be more open to attacks than we would be if we did it.
Our guest is Thomas Kane, former governor of New Jersey and chairman of the 9/11 Commission. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 800-989-8255, the email address totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Tom, who's on the line with us from Lakewood, Ohio.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
I have a little bit of education and background in police and military work, degree in criminology and criminal justice, served in the military police, and I think part of the problem is cultural. The police and military, by their nature, they attract a very regimented type of personality, and it was my experience that there was a general lack of imagination and a very territorial type of attitudes that was very us versus them type of culture that developed between the police agency and whoever they were policing, and also very territorial between the agencies. So it's really a problem from the ground up, and it's reflected in leadership right on down to the ground troops, and it's going to be very, very tough to change this culture and change those attitudes.
Tom, you're absolutely right, and that's what we found. I mean, as we studied and interviewed and talked and looked at documents and studied the history of 9/11, that's exactly the conclusion we came up with, that it is cultural. And that the culture in these agencies, as you've experienced in your life, is not for sharing.
Well, it's the main reason why I'm no longer involved in police work or in the military. I'm out doing more a publicly oriented type of service work now.
Yeah.
And it's anyone who shows any type of imagination very often is ridiculed for having too much brain power, and you just need to get in line and follow orders. I'll hang up now and listen to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Governor Kane, let me ask you another question. Criticism has come up of the intelligence community suffering from groupthink. The inability before 9/11 to conceive of such an attack is cited sometimes as an example of this. How does consolidating within one agency or under one national intelligence director help with groupthink? Wouldn't more agencies produce different competitive analysis?
Well, that's not what's happening. I mean, if you want to see an example of groupthink, look at Iraq. I mean, did anybody question this weapons of mass destruction business? Since 9/11, that's to me the biggest argument for what we're trying to do. The Senate actually made a very good report, the Senate Intelligence Committee. If you read that report, you find it's the best example of groupthink I know. What we're trying to do by setting up these centers is force communication and get rid of groupthink so that people are talking to each other and more opinions and more examples have a chance to get to the top. And then you have, of course, a National Intelligence Director who can help sort it all out. But what we have now is groupthink. If you want groupthink, or if you don't want groupthink, you got to change the status quo. I mean, that's the one message, if we can send it out to everybody, is that the status quo is no good, and the status quo cannot be allowed to exist, even though some people in government are very comfortable with things the way they are now. We've got to get them uncomfortable again.
How do you get people, whatever structure emerges from Congress and then is or is not signed by the president? But, again, it's getting down to the cultural question, getting back down to the ground of the people who are eyes and ears. How do you get people to listen?
Well, you've got to force it, really. I mean, I think it's fine to say build from the bottom up, but you've got to get somebody from the top down building from the bottom up. And we've got into that with the FBI. We decided that Director Mueller of the FBI is making good progress in trying to change the culture. To change it not only into a sharing culture, but make it into a culture where the FBI is not just bringing people to trial, but is also has another branch, which is investigating terrorism, investigating to break up plots using domestic intelligence. Now, that's a very top-down process right now, Director Mueller and a bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people in the FBI who are resisting that process. We said in the commission that's got to be institutionalized. One of the reasons we want a director of national intelligence is to institutionalize that.
Thomas
Mueller, if Mueller leaves, that doesn't disappear.
Thomas Kane, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Tom Kane is chairman of the 9/11 Commission. We'll have more on restructuring intelligence after a short break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing reforming how the nation gathers and uses intelligence. Of course, you're invited to join us as we continue our series on the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Over the past few weeks, a range of officials, including President Bush and several members of Congress, have issued their own proposals for intelligence reform. Joining us now with an overview of these plans is Martin Cady, reporter for the Congressional Quarterly. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice of you to come in today.
Thanks for having me today.
Let's start with the president. Yesterday he said he wants the NID, the National Intelligence Director, to have full budgetary authority. That means control over the budgets of these 15 different agencies. Did he mean 100% control?
Well, this actually doesn't mean 100% control. And this is a market shift from the White House. He originally said he wanted a national intelligence director. Wasn't sure about the extent of budget authority. Yesterday, he said such a director would have control over the National Foreign Intelligence Program, which covers about two-thirds of the entire national intelligence budget. So this isn't really full budget authority, but it's a significant chunk of it.
And would the president's proposal include the ability of the NID to hire and fire those agencies' heads beneath him?
Well, it's interesting. If you look more closely at the list the White House put out yesterday, you'll see a lot of terms like coordinate and do things in concurrence and play a role in these various things. It doesn't give him unilateral authority to hire and fire and nominate people to higher up positions. So it's not an absolutely powerful NID as the 9/11 Commission has recommended.
Well, the proposal issued this week by Senators McCain and Lieberman and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, they set out their legislation to enact, as they said, the recommendations of the commission. Would that legislation do it?
Yeah, the McCain-Lieberman legislation is by far the most sweeping thing we've seen since the 9/11 Commission came out with its report. Remember, Lieberman and McCain were the authors of the bill that created the 9/11 Commission, so now they've followed up with a legislative package that pretty much enacts all of their recommendations. So they would give the National Intelligence Director the full budget authority. There is a little bit of a difference there, and I think when they start to debate this, the devil is in the details, even though it looks like there's general support for this National Intelligence Director.
Now, another proposal was put out by Senator Pat Roberts, a Republican chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, that would have basically broken up the Central Intelligence Agency, among other things. Where is his proposal in relation to the 9/11 Commission and in relation to what's going to be acted on in Congress?
Well, right now, Roberts' proposal is really an outlier out there. It sounds like everyone's there's this stampede on Capitol Hill to embrace the 9/11 Commission report, and Roberts has this bill that's very different than some of the others. He would dismantle the CIA structure as we know it and recreate a national intelligence system under the disciplines of intelligence. For example, there would be a division that deals with collection, a division that deals with analysis of intelligence, a division that deals with science and technology, and one that deals with military intelligence. And his has been criticized by a lot of people, and it seems like it's still left out there being debated.
Okay. And the last, as I'm looking at this list of proposals from different elements, it seems as if the House Republicans are the one big party that's missing so far from this conversation. What are House Republicans proposing to do?
Well, so far it's not clear exactly what they're doing. It's interesting that we haven't heard from House Republicans. They haven't put out any specific proposals. Yesterday, Majority Leader Tom DeLay criticized Nancy Pelosi's proposal, which embraces the entire 9/11 Commission report. Interestingly, the White House on the same day put out a release saying that they have embraced 36 out of the 41 recommendations for the commission.
And indeed, the president has signed some executive orders that do make some changes in that regard. How far along are those?
Well, he signed some executive orders on August 27th, and those are really interim measures. One of them increases the authority of the director, the current director of the CIA, gives him a little bit more budget authority. There are some other mandates about information sharing, but these are, even the White House admitted, these are interim measures that while they await legislation to really strengthen the national intelligence system.
Well, let's get some more callers on the line. Here's Fred. Fred's calling from Rochester, New York.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to see some department where all information was filtered through, and in that department there would be a number of Democrats, a number of Republicans, and maybe some same number from Ralph Nader's group, and maybe some other groups that are interested in the citizens of the United States, and this way nobody would be able to thwart the information. And I don't like to have just one person ahead of this, because I think you're getting into a dictatorship.
Well, that is clearly a concern that's been raised by a lot of people, not just Fred, that this NID would be too powerful.
There has been sort of a note of caution out there, wondering whether the absolute centralization of intelligence power would somehow undermine the competitive analysis that goes on in the intelligence community. A lot of different divisions within the intelligence community put analysis on the same pieces of information, then they share and they sort of compare. And what it does is it creates a better product of intelligence in the long run. So there has been that worry. But the 9/11 Commission members, I'm sure Governor Kaine, as you talked to earlier, has said that they certainly still want that to happen throughout the entire intelligence structure.
But I think Fred's question went to the political nature of intelligence. Some people feel that the president was getting a politically skewed intelligence. I guess this comes up in just about every administration, not just the most recent one.
That's definitely a worry as well, which is why members of Congress are saying that this National Intelligence Director should not be in the White House. He should be an independent sort of cabinet-level member of the administration.
Let's get another caller in. Sean is on the phone from Kansas City.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
My question is, given the fact that the Central Intelligence Agency was originally established to serve as a warehouse of intelligence information by which other intelligence agencies would take their information and ship it to the Central Intelligence Agency and have the director of Central Intelligence overlooking that, really isn't the problem that there's all this turf wars going on between the various agencies, and it would be much easier that instead of adding another level of bureaucracy, that we could give the power to the Director of Central Intelligence as originally envisioned by Truman?
That's been one proposal, indeed. In some ways, President Bush's executive orders reinforce the powers of the Director of Central Intelligence as it currently exists now.
Well, the caller's absolutely right. The CIA was set up in 1947, after World War II, to create sort of a central repository for all the intelligence, and who's supposed to be a coordinator across the community. Over the last five decades, they've sort of lost that mission, and a lot of different intelligence agencies have popped up. We have 15 agencies in the intelligence community. So I think they've kind of lost that mission. They're trying to get back to that, which is why they want to have a national intelligence director who coordinates all the agencies, and also have this National Counterterrorism Center, which would be sort of the bank for all intelligence, whether it's from Navy intelligence or the Defense Intelligence Agency or the NSA.
But it wasn't the point that former Governor Kaine was making earlier. Isn't that the key aspect, that the Director of Central Intelligence now and then did not have control over the large elements of the intelligence community that report to the Secretary of Defense?
That's true. He has some nominal budgetary control right now, but in practice, it takes months and months to move money around. So while the Director of Central Intelligence is supposed to sort of in name have these budgetary powers, in practice it hasn't worked out that way, which is why they really want a National Intelligence Director to have full budget authority. I mean, as Governor Kaine said, if you don't give this guy budget authority, then don't do the position.
Sean, thanks for the question.
Thank you very much.
Let's go now with Diane. Diane's calling from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Oh, well, thank you very much. My question is, what is the proposed relationship between the new National Intelligence Director and the Department of Homeland Security?
Martin Katie?
Well, the Department of Homeland Security has a division known as the Information Analysis and Infrastructure Protection Division. Those folks would be coordinated. They would sort of be underneath a National Intelligence Director, and they would be, in theory, passing all their information, what they gather on Homeland Security, passing that up to the level of this National Intelligence Director, who would be getting Homeland Security information, and he would also be getting information from overseas and from the CIA and from our spy satellites. The idea is to have someone who coordinates all these. So there would supposed to be a strong relationship between Homeland Security and the National Intelligence Director.
So they would be co-equals or at equal rank?
I think the National Intelligence Director would be a higher rank.
But not a cabinet-level position?
Not a cabinet-level position, no.
Diane, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As these battles are being waged, each of these agencies is sort of struggling in a way for its own continued existence, as they see it, or its own continued existence in its current form, as we know it, perhaps is that way. How is this turf battle being fought out? Who's winning? Who's losing?
Well, it's early to tell who's winning and who's losing, but the fact that the White House and many members of Congress are endorsing full budget authority for a national intelligence director shows that that idea is winning out. And full budget authority means that they would have some control over the military intelligence agencies. 85% of the entire national intelligence budget is within the Pentagon. And some of the top-ranking people in the Pentagon do not want to give over control. They don't want to give over the turf over the budget control of their agencies. So they have something to lose in this.
Let's get another caller in. Tom is with us from Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes. Good afternoon, I guess.
Good afternoon.
I have a question about what rules of law will be applied by this combined agency. We know that the military and the CIA uses quite austere methods at times, torture, use of very disreputable persons like the war heroin and poppy and opium warlords in Afghanistan. Are we going to get that transferred to, is that going to meld into the American domestic intelligence and enforcement, or are we going to go out and start arresting those folks like we did with Noriega?
That's a really good question. When we start to combine our domestic intelligence functions that are carried out by the Justice Department, by the FBI, when you combine those with the CIA and our overseas intelligence operations, it raises a lot of questions about civil liberties, where you draw the line in there.
And when you combine the CIA's role of covert operations with what the Pentagon does now.
Yeah. And one of the proposals in the McCain-Lieberman bill introduced on Tuesday would create a Civil Liberties and Privacy Oversight Board. I think that was a piece of this bill that was overlooked, but they believe that it's an important part of this. This would be an independent, presidentially appointed board that would essentially be the watchdog for civil liberties violations when it came to how we share our intelligence, what kind of tactics we use overseas versus in our own country.
Tom, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We're hoping to speak with Senators Orrin Hatch and Evan Bayh. We're told that, in fact, a roll call vote is underway in the United States Senate, so we're having a little bit difficulty getting a hold of them. We'll bring them on as soon as either one becomes available. We're going to continue speaking now with Martin Cady, a reporter for Congressional Quarterly. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And Aileen joins us from Somerville, South Carolina.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. First of all, I want to say how much I appreciate the bipartisan efforts of the commission to work together to try to solve these problems, because we're not seeing a lot of that going on in the Congress right now in general, and so I think they've done a great job with their report. I don't think it would hurt to have a single chief, perhaps like the allied, the chief of the armed forces is one chief, but I think what really is being ignored here is what goes on the field agent level, let's say in the FBI or the CIA or Homeland Security. The Homeland Security law actually took away whistleblower protection from the employees, and as we know from the report, there were, for example, FBI field agents in Minnesota that had Massawi in jail and wanted to search his computer, but in fact, when Attorney Raleigh sent forth the writ to search the computer, it was FBI bureaucrats that stopped it from going forward to the court in D.C. So if we don't have the ability of the rank-and-file agents and employees of the federal government to actually do their job and to communicate with higher-ups and even communicate with Congress if necessary, I don't see how the situation is going to get any better.
Yeah, Martin, that was one thing that we talked about with Tom Kaine, and that is this idea that you have to at least in some respect, build things up from the ground up as well as from the top down.
Now, the caller's right on that, and we've all heard about the Phoenix memo and the missed signals with Massawi, and there isn't as much about whistleblower protections in any of the bills so far, at least not deep down in the details yet. But Governor Kaine was right in that if you don't have the people that are gathering the intelligence on the same page as the people at the top, then it's not the system isn't going to work as well.
Well, more than that, that's where your groupthink comes from. You know, the lower-level people are trying to serve the American public, but the higher-up bureaucrats won't listen to anybody below them.
Well, they think they're trying to serve the American public, too, but there are other things going on. Obviously,
a lot of politics.
Yeah, a lot of politics, too.
One of the things that you put in the 9/11 Commission report encourages more diversity with the CIA and better recruiting to solve these problems.
Aileen, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Mike is with us from Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, I'm interested to know some more information about what was going on with the computer systems. It was my understanding part of the commission's report said that the computers weren't talking to each other. People didn't have information passed back and forth between the agencies. I'm wondering, you know, in a day where I can use my ATM card to buy gasoline at a pump in Texas and have it recorded in my credit account here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, why there's such a problem with these computer systems? Why does this remain such a problem?
Martin?
Well, that is one area that's supposed to be improving. If you followed the FBI's pre-9/11 problems, they definitely had way outdated computers that were not connected to one another. I mean, there's a slew of problems in that level. But
even within the FBI, much
yeah, even
less
within the
to
FBI.
Other agencies.
Yeah, yeah, but, I guess I don't understand that. And, I mean, if I get pulled over by a police officer, he can punch in any kind of any information in the computer and come up with, you know, some ticket I had 10 years ago in Michigan. I don't understand why there should be an excuse about that. I don't understand that. It seems to me like all this talk of budgets and gets the power is kind of rearranging the deck chairs as the Titanic is going down. We know Al-Qaeda is going to attack us again, and it just seems like all this procedural matters and all this power brokering and the delays in Congress and in the administration just are setting us up. I'm sure that the Al-Qaeda people are laughing at us, saying, look at these idiots running in circles while we're about to attack them.
Well, there's two ways that they're trying to improve this problem, you say. One is to integrate all the various terrorist watch lists so that whether someone's coming through the airport, getting pulled over by a state trooper, or coming across the U.S. border at Canada or Mexico, all the various watch lists, I think there's about a dozen of them, are being integrated, and that's a major sort of systems integration computer project going on. The other thing is that there's talk of creating a chief information officer system-wide for the entire national intelligence system who would be in charge of making sure the information, digitally speaking, is all shared and all properly integrated.
And these, it's difficult to overcome bureaucratic inertia in this field as in any other. I mean, remember going back to the first Gulf War, the Air Force computers couldn't talk to the Navy computers. So, I mean, this is a longstanding problem of a bureaucracy in all kinds of government agencies. Obviously, in that military side, that's been resolved since then, but it wasn't easy and it took time. We're going to have more on the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission regarding restructuring intelligence, and we hope to be able to speak with Senators Hatch and Bayh when we come back from a short break. If you'd like to join the conversation again, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And Martin Cady, we wanted to thank you for your time today.
Thank
Martin Cady is a reporter for Congressional Quarterly covering intelligence and homeland security. Joined us here in Studio 3A. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are some of the stories NPR News is following this afternoon. A new study documents health problems suffered by Ground Zero workers following the 9/11 attacks. Almost half the people now have respiratory problems. More than half suffer psychologically. And U.S. troops today re-entered the town of Samarra, north of Baghdad, for the first time in months in a bid to reinstate the town council and its police force. More on those stories coming up later this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow's here with talking about readiness for a bioterror attack and how we can prevent a nuclear one, plus a move to disclose all clinical trials. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday with Ira Flatow. Today we're discussing the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission report, Restructuring Intelligence. Joining us now to talk about how Congress is working to address the recommendations is Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican of Utah, member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. Good to have you on the program again.
Well, nice to be with you.
What do you think the top priority of Congress should be right now as it looks at this legislation?
Well, the good news is that it appears that the Congress is going to pass a sweeping measure of intelligence community reform. the ongoing work of both the intelligence committees in the House and the Senate, which included the joint inquiry report and recommendations, as well as the good work of the 9/11 Commission, which concluded in July, as I recall, has led to a number of legislative reform initiatives. The bad news, though, is that reorganization, while marginally useful, should not create a false sense of accomplishment. Not until we have trained cadres of agents to penetrate the terrorist groups, the armed groups that currently include al-Qaeda, but will include others in the future, can we believe we have reformed the intelligence community. So, you know, to properly prepare us to understand, penetrate, co-opt, and neutralize armed groups, or terrorist groups, if you will, we're going to have to reform the culture of intelligence through new training, new doctrine, collaborations with other countries with experience in penetrating armed groups, etc.
That failure of human intelligence, as it's called, spies, people to get into an al-Qaeda-type organization and tip us off on what's going to happen, that is, many people say, the failure, the principal failure of intelligence before 9/11. How does restructuring the top, the National Intelligence Director, how does that make get us more spies?
Well, it is believed that if we restructure the intelligence community by creating a powerful yet independent National Intelligence Director who will basically have budget authority and the ability to move funds and personnel between various components of the intelligence community. For instance, there are 15 different groups in intelligence. People don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
That if we do that, that we will have a much more coordinated and better directed approach towards intelligence than we have now. I'm not so positive of that. But as you know, the chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Pat Roberts of Kansas, has carefully studied these recommendations in a meticulous and independent manner, I might add, and he introduced a major reform bill late last month, which I expect to give my full support to. Then we have the McCain-Lieberman bill, which probably will become one of the basic bills that they work off of, which also has adopted all of the 9/11 Commission recommendations, but has gone even beyond that with various authorizations and monies. But we'll have to sort all through this and make sure that we don't gum up the intelligence community worse than it is now.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation. Chris joins us from Minneapolis.
Hi, I have a question regarding the National Intelligence Director. And did the 9/11 Commission recommend that this be a cabinet-level position? And then I'm wondering why President Bush is not willing to make it a cabinet-level position, because it seems to me that that marginalizes and diminishes the power of that position.
Well, there's mixed emotions on that. One reason why some wanted it to be a cabinet-level position is because that emphasizes how important it is. But the other reason, and I think a much more persuasive reason, is that it should not be part of the president's political team. In other words, this is a person who has to serve both parties, all people, and should not be part of a political situation. So that's the argument on the other side. Personally, I agree with that argument. I think that
is that the same argument as to why the office should not be in the White House, whether it's cabinet level or
that's
not?
That's the same argument. And frankly, I agree with that argument because, let's face it, the National Intelligence Director should be a person of such dimension that he or she can literally direct the intelligence services, or at least make sure that they're running efficiently and well, and that there's enough intercooperation and interoperability among the, you know, the 15 different groups that comprise the intelligence community, and that they should do so without regard to politics.
Chris, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Senator Hatch, before we let you go, I'd like to ask if you think Congress is going to take action on this before it leaves before the election. You've got about a month.
Well, we fully intend to do so. The Government Affairs, Government Ops Committee is hard at work trying to come up with the right approach here, and I think they're probably working off of the McCain-Lieberman bill, and I hope they look at the bill put forth by Senator Roberts. I'm sure they will. Because there are unique aspects of the intelligence community that only people who serve on the intelligence community and have that background really fully understand. And, you know, there's a limited number of us who are serving on the intelligence committee, and we see things that no one else in government sees. other than the top intelligence people, including the top people at the White House.
Mm-hmm. One other thing. You were asking commissioners at hearings earlier this week about the idea of an intelligence university.
Well, yeah. You know, Senator Feinstein has suggested that we have an intelligence university where we train future intelligence leaders.
The equivalent to West Point or Annapolis.
Yeah, where they're really trained, and they really are, trained in the various aspects of intelligence, and where they can, seek the niche that they belong in or that they would prefer to work in, and have the background and the expertise to be able to immediately fit into the intelligence community. That's something we haven't done as well as we could, and there is some belief, and I'm among them who believe this, that if we had an intelligence university, it would be good for the full intelligence community.
Senator Hatch, thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to talk to you.
Orrin Hatch, a Republican from Utah, a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. Now with us, Senator Evan Bayh, Democrat from Indiana, another member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He, along with Senator McCain and Senator Lieberman, put forward this week an endorsement, a bill that endorses all the 9/11 Commission recommendations. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. Good to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
What differences are there that remain? Is this competing legislation, as Senator Hatch was putting in, as you look at the Roberts bill and the McCain-Lieberman bill?
Well, you can look at this as a continuum, Neil, all the way from the initial reaction of some in the bureaucracy to do as little as possible, all the way with the president and sort of next in the continuum, and then the 9/11 Commission recommendations next in the continuum in terms of more aggressive reform. And then sort of the ultimate step is the Senator Roberts bill, which Senator Hatch just mentioned, which what Senator Roberts has attempted to do is to step back and say, look, if we were starting all over again and we were trying to create a state-of-the-art structure for handling the intelligence necessary to our national security, what would we do? So he kind of has the most aggressive reform. And so there are still remaining differences of opinion. A lot of it has to do with not just budget authority, but the ability to hire and fire in terms of having greater accountability. And then also, not surprisingly, Congress so far has kind of left itself out. There's a lot of congressional reform that needs to take place here. And frankly, Neil, I think a number of people up here on Capitol Hill need to give up their own personal fiefdoms and powers and that kind of thing in the interests of streamlining and doing right by the national security. So Congress needs to get its own act together, too.
Well, we're going to be focusing on Congress's reforms as proposed by the 9/11 Commission when we return to this subject next week. So perhaps we'll have you back on at that point to talk about this. At the moment, we're still discussing the recommendations to reform the intelligence community. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Senator Bayh, let me get a caller on with you. Here's John calling from Wichita, Kansas.
Hi there. Quick question. What is it going to cost to get more people on the ground in the clandestine operations? One of the failures in Iraq was we didn't have anybody on the ground. How long does that take to train folks, and what type of person are we looking for? What's the numbers we're looking at? I'll take call off air.
Thank you, John.
That's a great question, and John should know that we've been working feverishly. The CIA and the other folks involved in the clandestine services have been working feverishly to try and reconstitute our capabilities in this area. We really got out of a lot of the aspects of good old-fashioned spy work starting in the mid-70s at a time when some of the excesses of the clandestine services brought that area into disrepute. And I think you can argue today, Neil, that we not only reacted to that as we should have to rein in some of the behavior that was not acceptable, but perhaps we overreacted and did some things that tied the hands of folks who are out there trying to get information that we need to protect ourselves. And we're now trying to, post 9/11, correct that, reconstitute that as quickly as possible. But it's not as easy as launching a satellite. It's not as easy as intercepting a cell phone conversation. Training people from the right ethnic, he asks what kind of people. We need people who speak the right languages, belong to the right ethnic groups, can be inserted in some of these places, and it takes a period of years for them to work their way into positions of acceptance and responsibility where they will be able to give us the kind of information that we need. So we're short on folks who speak those kind of languages, belong to those kind of ethnic groups, and so forth. And until then, George Tenet, before he left, thought he would it would take at least 5 years, John. So I think that's a good place to start. My own estimate is we'll be fortunate if it only takes 5 years. And in terms of the money, you know, in the great scheme of things, it costs real money. But the amount that you're talking about to do this is relatively inexpensive when you compare it to the Pentagon's budget and those sorts of things. So it's more a matter of emphasis than resources. It does take resources, but it's not a huge amount of money. And final thing I'd say, Neil, is until we get on top of this, and your listeners should know this, we are going to be more dependent on our national security, on the Egyptians, the Jordanians, the Moroccans, the Saudis, and others, than we would like to be, because they have people in positions that can get access to this kind of information. But then we have to, you know, ask ourselves, do they have an agenda? Are they telling us the truth? That kind of thing. And it's so being overly dependent on other countries for information that we need to protect our own country, it's not a very comfortable position to be in.
Let's see if we can get one more call in. Scott is with us from Appleton, Wisconsin. Hello, Scott.
Hello, yes. I'm kind of curious, as you know, with all the reforms that we're talking about with our national security agencies, and as someone made a claim to of getting rid of the little fiefdoms that are in all the agencies, will we ever see the time, or hopefully see the time, when the quote-unquote stovepipe intelligence agencies are gone, where nobody, they don't want to share because of budgeting or burning operatives or trying to maintain that they're better out of all the agencies across the board?
Well, and they also feel they take a proprietary interest in the information that they have. They don't want to share it too often. The answer, Scott, is we have made progress following 9/11, but there's a lot more progress to be made. And it does take some time, because it's not just a matter of redrawing boxes on an organizational chart to do away with the stovepipes. We also have to change the cultures of some of these organizations, where they do have, for obvious reasons, a history of not sharing information, of being very, you know, keeping it close to the vest. And so we have to create a more cooperative culture in some of these institutions. Otherwise, you know, the very best structure that you can, you know, create won't work. So we are making progress in that regard. The stovepipes are less than they used to be. There is more sharing, but more needs to be done, and it involves the way that we train these people, and you know, in instilling in them a culture of sharing rather than not sharing vital information.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Okay, and we just have a minute left with you, Senator, but I did want to ask one specific recommendation that's been contentious is the idea that the CIA should give up the covert operations, that those sorts of things should be done in the future by the Pentagon.
Well, I think I personally am not in favor of that. I think the Pentagon should retain its paramilitary capabilities, some of the special forces work that they do very well. But there's something to be said, Neil, for having the CIA do a somewhat different kind of work that really is not very specifically military in its conception or its application. So I think that there is an important distinction there, and some different skills and perspectives that I think it is useful to the national security to have the Pentagon retain what it does and the CIA retain what it does, because they are not completely similar.
Senator Bayh, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
Evan Bayh, a Democrat from Indiana, member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington, D.C.